Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And
our sponsor this hour.
Phil thought he'd turn the tables and just stare at me and see if I wasn't saying anything.
I was testing you. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They've got quite a few tractors down there. Now's the time to go down and check out the inventory. They're slowly coming in with all the shortages. We're slowly getting the inventory back up where it should be. But go down and see them. They've got several models to choose from. And you can see them at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 and just talk to them, see what they got on the lot. And you can also get them online, believe it or not. They have a heck of a website, papemachinery.com, and you can actually go on there and build your own tractor and get pricing and everything right there on the website. So, they got it all
going on. You can't drive
it
off the website, though, can you?
No, you can't drive it off the website.
You've got to actually drive it off the lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, some models you can actually build them, pay for them, and pick a delivery date.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
You guys should change your name, pizzatractors.com.
Yeah, Dave Smith your, Tractor.
Pick your toppings.
You get five toppings for $10.99.
We keep up doing what we're doing. We'll probably be there. But we won't, though, because now what do they want, $30 minimum wage?
Yeah, now they want to raise it. I heard they wanted to raise the minimum wage to $30 now.
That'll help.
Yeah,
that'll totally help.
Yeah. That'll put more money in everybody's pocket, and things will get cheaper, and we'll all be happy.
Yep. Because it makes perfect sense.
That's basic economics right there.
People who have never had a job or taken an econ class. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could probably add some more in there, but I won't. I'll stop myself. Our guest. Today, our hostage, I guess I should say. And he's such a good hostage, too. He always comes on with us on holidays and things, but I thought he was just the perfect guy to have for July 4th is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He is our most patriotic guy. I mean, there's a lot of patriotic people, but, they don't have the history cred to back it up.
No.
They can't just, chatterbox about history. It's very helpful. So he was in the process of discussing the Federalist Papers, which I dare say most Americans have not read.
Not read and not really sure what they're all about.
Yeah.
But, every once in a while you'll hear somebody quote something from the Federalist Papers, but not very many. Mark Levin, I mean, he talks about them quite a bit, but not very many people do.
So Dr. Pry, go back to that a little bit if you'd like.
Sure. The Federalist Papers are really foundational. Or should have been, and for many years were, foundational to our education, understanding about how our system is supposed to work. And as I was saying, after the American Revolution, there was no strong federal government. There wasn't a federal government. It didn't exist during the American Revolution. The states cooperated, through the Articles of Confederation and through the Constitutional Congress, the government, such as it was, that was based in Philadelphia at the time, and really the thing holding the country together was really the Continental Army, represented by George Washington, But after we got independence, the founders were pretty divided. The states were pretty divided. Those who had been in Philadelphia and were associated with fighting the revolution and organizing the revolution, people like Alexander Hamilton and James Monroe and Madison, and who had also been some of the leading thinkers on why we had independence, wanted to move us toward a not tyrannically centralized form of government, but a more centralized form of government, to have some kind of central power in Washington that they call a federal form of government, that was not as weak as a confederation, but not a monarchy, not a tyrannical system, something a half step further in that direction, so that you would have a centralized form of government for things like foreign policy and defense policy and regulating relations, regulating trade, between the states, so that wouldn't have a civil war breakout, you know, or any kind of conflicts between the states. And that was pretty much supposed to be it. Those were supposed to be the limited functions of the federal government, principally to do with national security, mostly. And many of the states and a lot of the citizens were very leery of this and reluctant to go in that direction. They were reluctant to go in any direction that was going back toward centralizing power, because we just fought a revolution over that, you know, getting away from the monarchical European system and fighting that war in a lot of respects, based on philosophical principles that favored individualism and the decentralization of power. The more decentralized the power is, the freer you are. So the Federalist Papers were basically the arguments made by Alexander Hamilton and James Madison and Monroe, making the case for moving from an article, a system where the colonies were organized, now the independent states. The independent states were, instead of being organized loosely under the Articles of Confederation, would be organized a little more tightly and a little more centrally and formally under a federal system. And they provide from generations, the Federalist Papers were used to educate American students and citizens on why our federal system makes sense, you know. And up until 10 years ago, I guess, maybe up until 5 years ago, until we had the experience with President Trump, I probably would have agreed with the Federalist Papers and said, yeah, these are, you know, this was an ingenious system that we came up with. And it's not that it wasn't an ingenious system. It did work well for a long time. But today, it's amazing how systems fall apart so quickly, you know, because within my lifetime, I guess is what I'm saying, within my lifetime, I've gone from taking an attitude that, yeah, the founders were such geniuses, the particular founders, Hamilton, Madison and Monroe, they were such geniuses, to have come up with the federal system with its checks and balances. For most of my life, I and most other Americans who are, you know, who are familiar with our history and the forming of the Constitution, I think would all have agreed on that. But today, if you really believed in the values of the founders, you know, if you read the Federalist Papers, as I did recently, a couple of weeks ago, just went back and reread them, you know, you say, wow, these guys turned out to be wrong about everything. They were wrong about everything. And, you know, I'm not blaming them or saying that they were stupid or anything like that. They were brilliant men, smarter than I am. It's not an easy thing to launch a system that lasts for so long. But we managed to deconstruct their system over time. That's the problem. As I said, you know, people like Mark Levin, for example, have been warning about what the progressives did during the progressive era with the income tax. Another thing they did, you know, was, well, let me get into the Federalist Papers, actually, because some of the arguments, you know, what were the brilliant arguments that they made to their fellow citizens and why we should move from Articles of the Confederation, where we basically had this collection of sovereign states, to a federalist system, under which the states were really still supposed to be sovereign, you know. But we now also, on top of that, had this central government there that was there for foreign policy and for the national emergency of war, and also so that we could avoid civil war between the states. And their argument was, look, we know you guys are terrified of having a tyranny arise, but that's not going to happen. You know, there's a number of reasons that's not going to happen. Because under the Constitution, you know, we've got, it's a president and not a monarch. And the president's power is balanced by both the House and the Senate. And the Senate, and This isn't true today, but it was true then, and it was true up until the Progressive Era. You know, the Senate is appointed by the state legislators. So the Senate will represent states' rights. It will represent the interests of the states. And so you people, all of you individual states that are worried about your sovereignty and about states' rights and about the power, your power to govern yourselves, don't worry about it. You're going to have a Senate built right into the federal system to watch the president and to watch the House and to protect the interests of the states. Now, we don't have that anymore because the progressives, there's always when you get into Republican, and our system, by the way, is a Republican. Actually, it's not a purely Republican system of government either. That's one of the other things. We often hear people and have debates, and they'll correct it and say, well, we're not a democracy. Actually, and it's true that the founders were really suspicious of democracy. The idea of everything being determined by one man, one vote, and the mass of the people voting on something, that's the way Athenian democracy worked. And Athenian democracy only lasted 100 years. It was also the golden age of Greece when Socrates and Aristotle and where the great philosophers that contributed so much to Western culture live. But it's a very tumultuous form of government. The way of describing democracy is mobocracy. You know, the mob is subject. In effect, they tend to listen to the last guy that talks to them, who is eloquent and fiery. And doesn't stay the course. Zigs and zags. It ends up persecuting a lot of its own most gifted citizens, because the guy who is a hero today becomes an enemy tomorrow because he has other enemies that convince the mob that he's a bad guy. One of the most famous works, and it's still a classical work that we study to understand both history and war and foreign affairs, is the Peloponnesian Wars, written by an Athenian general named Thucydides, who himself had fought as a general during to defend Athens, the Athenian democracy, against Sparta. But he was among the generals who was exiled because the mob turned on him. And in the end, Athens lost the Peloponnesian War and became a tyranny, you know, because the democratic system had this internal weakness of not being able to stay the course and not really exercising good judgment. Democracies don't exercise good judgment. They're so subject to the passions of the moment. So that the founders were very suspicious of democracy, and they didn't want us to be a democracy. Yet it has become routine for us as Americans to refer to our own system as a democratic form of government. And it's not really. It's also, we typically call ourselves a republic. You know, we're not purely a republic either. You know, what we are is a fusion of democracy, republic, and monarchy. You know, those are the three systems that were described by Aristotle in his great work on Ars Politica, you know, describing political philosophy. And we have elements of all three, and the founders hoped that by fusing these three elements together that we would make a stronger system than either a democracy or a republic or a tyranny. And so the House of Representatives in the federal system is supposed to be the democracy, because those representatives are elected, you know, by constituents out of a district every 2 years. And so those people are supposed to be closest to the people, closest to being tribunes to the people. They're constantly worried about losing their election in 2 years. And so they're supposed to be, you know, more sensitive to what the crowd wants. But balancing that are supposed to be the statesmen in the Senate, who are not popularly elected, and they represent the interests of the state, that is the state sovereign, the sovereign individual states, and are appointed by the state legislators, who are also popularly elected. But these state legislatures will have the interests of their states in mind, as in addition to their constituents. And so they're supposed to have a more, and because they're only elected every 6 years, you know, they're not under the pressure of constantly worrying about their seat. And the persons they're most worried about answering to are not to the, not to the man in the street, but to the men in the state legislature who appointed them. So they were supposed to, you know, protect states' rights. And then the monarchical element of it is supposed to be the president, who serves as the commander-in-chief and the guy who runs foreign policy. So, you know, we're not really, we're not a democracy, we're not truly a pure republic, and we're not a tyranny or a monarchy either, but we have elements of all three of them in our system.
And if we would leave them to operate the way they're supposed to operate, I think if we could get back...
We might have... Right. One of the other... you might be right.
Yeah, if we could kind of get back to that. We have to take a really quick break. Sorry. I was not paying attention. We're a little tardy. But take a really swift break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. And you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Pay no attention to the people in the street, crying out for accountability. Make a joke of what we believe. Say
I know she's not perfect, and that we agree. I think that you'll come to find there's no other place like the U.S. of A. If you can't see that sun, you're blind. Don't be surprised if I get fighting mad. Least we can do is to stand for the men who have died and laid down their lives for people they don't even know. The moms and the dads and all of the kids whose loved ones will never come home. When that anthem is played and Old Glory is waiting, I cover my heart with my hand. That's where I stand.
Good reminder today.
Amen.
So it doesn't matter where you are when you hear the national anthem, you should stand up. My parents always taught us to stand up, even if we were at home. Didn't have to be in a public venue. And, if you're wearing a hat during the Pledge of Allegiance, somebody should poke you in the back. That would be my mom's job. She no longer has that dubious distinction, but tell you what, my mom, she didn't get mad about very many things, but if you didn't stand during the national anthem or you stood there without your hand on your heart and you were wearing a hat, she was popping you in the back of the head. It's very, very out of character, but not in that circumstance. So... anyway, for the next generation, we better get with the program. You don't disrespect your own flag. Especially on the 4th of July, and there can be a lot of flags today. So
yep.
Just throw that little reminder out there for the people who have forgotten. So, Dr. Pry, do you think with the changes that we have made, I mean, you highlighted a really significant change before the break about how our federal Senate was derived from our state or states rather than making it a, you know, quote, democratic
election.
Yeah, popular election. That's better wording.
Right. which happened during the Progressive Era. So that was another major significant change that opened us up to the decline that we are at today, where they, where the progressives thought they knew better than the founders. So in addition to making the income tax constitutional, they also changed the nature of the Senate so that it was also popularly elected, and that knocked the props, helped knock the props out from under states' rights, which had already been very seriously weakened by the outcome of the American Civil War, which was fought. I mean, the real, you know, yes, slavery was a foundational reason for the fighting of the American Civil War. We talked about this in an earlier program, but a more fundamental reason was the different interpretation between the Southern states and the federal government, a dispute over the states' rights. If you go back and read the Federalist Papers and you read the arguments of the founders, you'll find that the South had the better constitutional argument. You know, in effect, let me put it into a nutshell. We keep getting interrupted with these commercials, and not easy stuff that you can really, you know, do on a radio show in between, you know, 5-minute commercials or something. But, you know, to try to put it in a nutshell, the arguments of the Federalist Papers were, you know, there were several great barriers, several almost insurmountable barriers, looking from the perspective of the aftermath of the American Revolution, several almost insurmountable barriers that the proposed federal system would prevent the proposed federal government in Washington from becoming a tyranny. You know, one of those was the right in the Constitution. You had, as I said, these checks and balances built in between the House, the Senate, and the President and the Supreme Court. Checks and balances right within the system written into it. Then on top, another check and balance, huge one, we had already talked about the role of the Senate representing the states so that you'd have a champion for states' rights right there all the time, you know, right in the federal government itself. Then there would be the states themselves, so that the states that were at that time, it wasn't envisioned that the states would become what they are today, basically creatures of the federal government, but the states were considered serious, almost independent nations. They had sovereignty, okay? And they, most governance, you know, that wasn't done in the federal government was supposed to be done at the states and local levels. That's where government was supposed to happen, more so with the local levels than the states. But the states were supposed to be fundamentally more powerful when it came to making all kinds of decisions that affected the people than the federal government was, a lot more powerful than they were. And that the states themselves would be able to take care of themselves. And if they saw the federal government getting out of line and overreaching its powers, that the states would intervene. And indeed, that was one of the reasons we ended up having a civil war in this country, because half the country did see the state, the federal government is moving that direction. And the issue, you know, fundamental to that was slavery, but there were other also fundamental issues too, but let's not get in and refight the civil war. Fundamental barrier that was considered that Hamilton and Madison and Monroe argued to their fellow citizens was, well, look, if the checks and balances at the federal level fail, and then the states also fail to restrain the rise of tyranny in the federal government, the people are there. The people is the ultimate guarantor. And we have written in a Second Amendment, so the people are going to be armed, okay? And if you, that's another reason, perhaps, why we don't have, well, a conspiracy theory on my part. But if a population and our was properly educated and our policymakers were properly educated, there is no way an honest person could make the argument that guns are for hunting and sports.
Yeah.
Okay. Or they're supposed to be for some kind of a militia controlled by the feds or controlled by the states, okay? No. It comes up over and over again in the Federalist Papers that if the federal system checks and balances fail, and if the state, if they fail and they're overcome, then the people are the last line of resort. An armed people are the last line of defense against tyranny. That's why people have guns, you know? And this is a specious and untrue argument, you know, when you unpackage the Federalist Papers about why we have a Second Amendment, why people have arms. Also, a thing that President Biden recently said was untrue, and I was astonished that a president would say it, and it shows, I think, it reveals the crisis we've come to when the president on television scolded the American people who value and cherish their Second Amendment rights, and he scolded them and said, there's no way you can expect to take on the federal government. You know, we've got the army. We've got nuclear weapons. I mean, a president of the United States, in effect, threatening the American people with nuclear weapons. You know, even if it was meant tongue-in-cheek, it's an unwise and tyrannical thing to do with this past when half the country fears the government is illegitimate and that we're moving to totalitarianism. Astonishing, the things that are happening these days, but it's right out of it's the worst nightmares, the kind of worst nightmares finally arrived at our door, you know, that the founders warned about. And so that's why people have got guns. And by the way, and another part of the argument that isn't true, that, you know, you'll find the left often saying, okay, you can have flintlocks if you want, you know, because that's the kind of firearm that was permitted to the American people at the time of the Second Amendment. And they stupidly and ignorantly, seriously argue that as if the Second Amendment was meant to limit people to 18th and 17th century firearms, which it was not. You know, the kind of arms that were permitted to the average citizen were the flintlock, you know, was the most advanced military arm of the time. And people weren't just limited to personal sidearms. Individuals could own cannons. You know, you could own what was in effect a weapon of mass destruction back in those days. And there are still places including in New York State, where you can go and visit private residences that at the time were on the frontier, where people had cannons in their own, and they would also build little log stronghouses. You know. Their own private fortresses to protect themselves against French, Canadian, and Indian raids. And these people not only had their own fortresses, but cannons, you know. So people, the private citizens at the time, you know, had the most advanced weaponry that was all available to nation states. And this included merchant vessels, which were armed with cannons and the most advanced kinds of weaponry to fight off piracy. And also to be part of the to support the Navy in the event of a war, you know, because the merchant fleet could be mobilized, you know, as we did during the War of 1812, you know, to support the U.S. Navy and its activities. But it was also part of the Second Amendment, because those forces would have been available to a enraged citizenry that was trying to fight against the tyranny at home. So when you really read the Federalist Papers, I mean, people will be struck, I think, at how many times the Second Amendment comes up, you know, that, hey, and this is the last resort, that the people are the last and perhaps even the best guarantee against this rise of tyranny. In addition to the fact that the population is armed, one of the reasons they believed that at the time was because of the American character. The Constitution was written for a particular kind of American that they thought was going to continue to exist, was unique to this country, and was going to flourish in this country, and was going to continue to populate this country out into future generations. And that is a character, the kind of character that was in existence in the cities and towns, and especially on the frontiers of the growing America. You know, people who were rugged individualists and self-sufficient and jealous of their freedom, didn't want anybody telling them what to do, their future prosperity. It wasn't just because they were touchy when it came to power, you know, but they wanted to be free to be able to start a farm or run a small shop or move to the frontier and take up farming or mining or some whatever occupation they decided was going to make them rich and ensure security for their families. And they believed in themselves. They didn't believe that somebody else could make better decisions for them. They'd already had that kind of experience under mercantilism. They didn't want their horizons being limited by any government. You know, they'd already had that experience under mercantilism, and it was one of the major reasons the Civil War was found. The American Revolution was fought. Likewise, they wanted to be free to practice their faith, whatever it was. And there were a great many wide variety of faiths that existed in the American colonies, and they wanted to be free to practice them and raise their children according to their own values, not to the some values that some government was going to tell them to do, as what was would have been the case when you were living in Britain, and those same prejudices were extended to us when we were in the colonies. I mean, it's really, people haven't commented on it very much, but I believe it's still an element of the British Constitution today that a Catholic cannot sit on the throne of England. It was written right into the British Constitution in the aftermath of the Glorious Revolution of 1688, you know, which is why this young woman who's been in the focus of controversy and married one of the, this young American woman, I can't remember her name, but, you know, part of the controversy over her, over the marriage is that she's Catholic, okay? And, you know, that which raised even today constitutional questions. So you can just imagine what it must have been like in the old days.
Oh, my gosh,
I mean, these
yes.
things are survivals, you know, from an earlier period, but they're still there. So the difference in the level of freedom at all levels, personal, political, religious, economic, was across the board an enormous revolution, you know, unprecedented really in human history. And it's what, and they were right. The Enlightenment philosophers were right. The founders were right. They knew they were going to be right because this was their own lived experience in terms of having come to America, many of them with modest backgrounds and, being able to build huge fortunes in this country. But still, you know, those fortunes and their possessions at risk because of this tyrannical, monarchical, mercantilist system that they lived under and that they wanted to escape, you know, that they were afraid that as Parliament and the King became more noteworthy of their wealth and success, that, you know, they might want to claim more of it. And,
yeah.
Imagine
that.
Aristocracy. Excuse me.
I said, imagine that. It was a valid fear.
Exactly.
We have to get interrupted by the free enterprise system one more time.
Yes.
Briefly, and then, but I want to ask you about, you know, what all this, you know, within the past year, I look at the overreach, the massive overreach of federal and state government with just the COVID injections. Just that one thing. Forget the masks and all the rest of it, although that's all part of it. But you look at the overreach that has happened with that and whether or not we'll ever be able to really reclaim our individual liberty that we kind of gave up. Concern for me. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sometimes I want to light up underneath the no smoking sign. Sometimes I wish they'd tell me how justice got so blind. I wish they'd just leave me alone, cause I'm doing alright. You can take your change on down the road and leave me here with mine. Cause that ain't my America, that ain't this country. White and blue. They ain't us.
We hang out with people just like you. My hair's turning white, my neck's always been red, my collar's still blue. We've always been here, just trying to sing the truth to you. Guess you could say we've always been red, white, and blue.
Well, 4th of July with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry here at We the People Radio, and we hope you're having a nice afternoon wherever you are. And so what do you think about all this, what do we call it, overreach, encroachment, insanity of the past year?
Yeah, I think we've seen with startling speed the destruction of the Constitution right in front of our eyes. Including, I'm sorry, sad to say, you know, by our own President Trump, you know, who we supported and all the rest. But and don't get me wrong, I voted for him, I supported him, I think he was a good man. But I think one of the prices we paid for a person who was good on the stump and was a popularist president, all right, but he didn't have a good, deep grounding understanding of our constitution and of the history that I'm talking about here, and the way of government and the limited roles of government. By listening to Dr. Fauci, and, you know, there's nowhere in the Constitution that says if Dr. Fauci tells you you're going to face a health crisis, well, the Bill of Rights is suspended and all these constitutional checks and balances go out the window. You know, and it's going to be okay to have a tyranny for a little while. You know, as a matter of fact, that's how the Athenian democracy worked. You could suspend Athenian democracy and have a tyranny for a while. And it's almost as if Washington decided that that's what they're going to do, and they're going to which they're continuing to do, using COVID as an excuse. But that's not in the Constitution. There's no excuse ever for violating for this kind of overreach and violating people's rights. And I just think it's a mark of the corruption and rot that has gotten so deep that so many courts have approved of a lot of the things that are being done because, you know, the courts don't want to court controversy with the growth in federal power. They want to be on the side of history and see themselves as progressive. And our educational institutions have been not teaching the history of our laws as they have been constitutionally derived. They've been teaching more radical theories that justify a Marxist tyrannical approach toward the role of government. And I'm not surprised. I like everybody else have been taken by surprise at the swiftness. But in retrospect, I'm not surprised that it has happened this way. You know, because it usually happens that way. We were talking before about the fall of the Roman, of Athenian democracy. You know. The Athenians, I'm sure, were taken by surprise when they lost the war to Sparta, in no small measure because of the internal flaws to Athenian democracy. What happens is the members that make that society strong, that make freedom strong, that make the system work, are eroded by small degrees over time, and then collapse when confronted with some crisis. I mean, a good example of this is what happened to the Roman Republic after 400 years of being a republic. It only took one generation, half a generation, really, for the republic to fall. But a mistake had been made like a century before the fall, during the Second Punic War, in order to defeat the Carthaginian Empire and Hannibal. You know, they basically ended up having to form professional armies that were, for all practical purposes, permanent armies in the field. And this ended up destroying the economic and political base of the Roman Empire that was comprised of small farmers, you know, who were jealous of their turf and suspicious of the aristocracy and didn't want big government. But they all became soldiers. Those guys became soldiers. the aristocrats took over their land, and in order to make a living, we either had to be unemployed in the city and taken care of by bread and circuses, or you had to be in the army. And so your loyalty became to your general, you know, and not to the Republic. And so it created an opportunity for someone like a Julius Caesar to come in. And they were so shocked after having done this, you know, messed up the system that made the Roman Republic strong for 400 years, and they knocked the props out from it themselves for the aristocracy of Rome because of their greed for land. And it doomed them to an imperial system. And it doomed them to a lot of their lives. A lot of the aristocracy lost their lives in the Civil War, first against Julius Caesar, but then against his nephew, you know, Octavian, who became Caesar Augustus, you know, who hunted down and killed the remnants of the Republic, you know, who would not submit to imperial rule. And we've sort of are seeing, we are reaping the fruits now of what we have been talking about, the things that happened a little over a century ago during the Progressive Era, making the income tax constitutional, you know, making the Senate popularly elected, tolerating the growth of huge bureaucracies at the state and federal level, with civil service systems that have inordinate power and more wealth and control than the average citizen. And now, when we see what's happening with people being forced to wear masks by idiots like Dr. Fauci having so much power over us, people being losing control of their bodies, you know, or at least the government wants to take our bodies over and inject us with vaccines, even against our will. When you put it in historical perspective, is it really that surprising that it's happening? Shouldn't be.
No.
Almost predictable if you use logic and you just follow historical precedent and look at the trajectory of the growth of federal power. And many of us have warned about this. You too, all of us who have been cultural conservatives have worried about this moment. But how many of us actually thought it would happen during our lifetimes? Just like the Republican Senate, you know, in Rome, you know, was taken so by surprise by Julius Caesar when it actually happened, you know. So we have been taken by surprise. But at least most of us, I mean, We the People Radio, has been one of the forces for goodness in trying to hold back the tide of history here. Most cultural conservatives have been warning about this sort of thing for decades, but we've been ignored by the people who are supposed to be our political leaders in the Republican Party, you know, who have really failed. I mean, I think one of the most eye-opening things, of course, that has happened over these short 4 years of Trump, you know, is the exposure of the Republican Party as being a fake political party. You know, that we've really, really had a uniparty system for quite a while, where the Republicans have agreed to be a junior partner in Washington as long as they get to share the corruption whenever they get in control. But when it comes to these real issues that we've been talking about, you know, they pay lip service to it so that people will send them dollars so that they can get elected. And I'm not condemning all Republicans. I mean, there are definitely heroes out there.
But we have, like, the, you know, the Liz Cheneys that are seen as, you know, leaders, or have been seen as...
Or Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
The actual leaders, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, where are the conservatives who are actual leaders in the Republican Party? They're not. You know, they're lone voices that do not have the power... do not have control of the political machinery of the Republican Party. I mean, the last thing I remember Mitch McConnell saying on TV, maybe he said other things, but the last thing I remember him being quoted as saying is promising us that the insurrectionists of January 6th will be punished to the fullest extent of the law. Okay? You know, the insurrectionists. The worst these people have been charged with is trespassing. And they've been, their civil rights, I believe, have been violated. I think their constitutional rights have been violated. Many of them are still in prison, languishing in prison, supposedly for trespassing charges. And they're being threatened to have their lives destroyed for basically an act of political demonstration, you know? But how many times have we heard the Democrats come forward? What senior Democrat has come forward and said, promised us that Black Lives Matters and Antifa, for destroying our cities, for murder and mayhem over the past year, are going to be punished to the full extent of the law.
Yeah, zero people have said that.
They're being let out by the hundreds.
Yeah.
They're being let out by the hundreds and not prosecuted anywhere. So,
And not only that, but I guess the part that just really galls me on that is that now we're supposed to accept that, because it's, you know, they were demonstrating about an injustice. So if you could stomach that part, then it made it okay to burn down a city. Then it's okay if they stole stuff because they really needed it.
They needed it.
And it's like, what are you talking about? You can't do that. But yeah, people go into the Capitol, and I think it's interesting too. I'm sure you about, you know, scream at the shake your fist at the sky. You know, I can only see the look on your face when they talk about how they tried to overthrow the government.
Yeah, how ridiculous!
I love it. They went unarmed into a building, and that was going to overthrow the government. I'm like,
well, what? Especially what? In fact, you're in a totalitarian system when you can basically just reverse engineer whatever the totalitarian voice is telling you, reverse it, you know, and it's what they have done.
Yeah.
They're accusing you of what they have done. You know, the government, a legitimate government, was overthrown. It was Donald Trump's legitimate government. They knowingly, they stole an election, you know, from Donald Trump and the Republicans and from his voters, from the 85 million voters who voted for him.
And I cannot wait until the Arizona audit is released because I do know that they found pretty much everything that they were looking for and have proven it beyond the shadow of a doubt. So there's no more affidavits and, you know, a statistical supposition. I mean, it's all been proven.
Well, I hope you're right. But the Arizona count is becoming more and more to me like the old Art Carney piano playing routine. I don't know if you're old enough to ever remember the Jackie Gleason show.
I do, but I don't.
Okay, and he had an Art Carney. He had his fellow comic on there.
Yeah,
and Art Carney would already get ready to play the piano, you know, and he never actually ends up playing a note. But it's all this preparation to play the piano. And I keep hearing about the Arizona summit. I keep saying summit, Arizona recount. And the Arizona audit, and about what is going to happen, and all the rest. And I thought it was they were supposed to have done it already back in June.
It is basically done. They
next year in Jerusalem, I suppose.
I guess, but it's brutal because, well, it's interesting because there are a few other states. Oh, are they playing the music already? Oh, he's nodding his head. Oh my gosh, we're out of time. All right, Dr. Pry, we'll talk to you again very soon. Thank you so much for coming on with us on the 4th of July.
And, well, happy 4th of July, despite everything I've said today.
And despite all our concurrence. You've been listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Winter getting colder, summer getting warmer, tidal wave come across the Mexican border. Why buy a gallon? It's cheaper by the barrel. Just don't get busted singing Christmas carols.